This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, still to come in this hour, Jalen Mitchell, the running back from Louisville, will be with us.
Team of mystery.
Ahead of Friday night's game with UCF. And then Tom Luganville at 8:30. Andrew Adelson in the 9 o'clock hour. But we start hour two, folks, with conference guides. Yep. Let's dial it up to Southwest Virginia.
Oh, I like it.
Right?
Fun with food.
Hokies on the road at Morgantown America on Saturday, high noon. And Justin Fuente talks about what's at stake against the Mountaineers. Especially, this will be the first Hokie road game with fans in the stands in 2 years.
Well, you're right, it will. And we'll need to do some work simulating some of that this week. But it has been a while. And, you know, I think the key is the things that we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, we should relish the opportunity to play in a game like this with – the tradition that these two teams have with the, not just a trophy, but the things that are at stake in this game. It's awesome opportunities. This is why you do all that work in the off season. So we should relish the opportunity, but we also have to understand we can't get carried away with it. And, when you play on the road in a hostile environment, it just enhances all your feelings, all your emotions. And, you know, sometimes you can, you can be up by 14 and the other team can kick a field goal and it sounds like and feels like you're down by 21. You just got to continue to stay in the moment and play the next play. And, you know, and an encouraging aspect of that is we are an older team. We should be able to handle all that. You know, we should be able to understand that part of it and kind of be where our feet are.
Be where our feet are. Stay in the moment.
Well, he's found that's normally a pretty good approach.
Yeah.
I think coach's comment regarding an experienced football team does come into play.
That's it.
I think it's really the most important aspect of everything he just talked about, and it will be hostile. I got news for you. Eddie Royal was on with us yesterday, and we kidded around that, you wear that helmet when you come through that tunnel, and West Virginia will be thrilled to see it. It's a really critical game for the Mountaineers. Given their 1-1 start, knowing they've got the 15th ranked team in the country coming to town this weekend, they go to Oklahoma next weekend. I mean, you're looking at 1-3 if you don't have your act together. They understand they'll play desperate against Virginia Tech. And for the Hokies, I think this is one of those moments, again, much like North Carolina in some respects, you get a chance to sharpen your skills. So say you, if Virginia Tech right. survives this road trip after the pressure to have to beat North Carolina, and they did, no hangover effect against Middle Tennessee State. And if you went on the road in that environment, I think if you're Virginia Tech, you're like, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
We are the team to beat. No disrespect. I don't care what Virginia does in Chapel Hill. We've already beaten North Carolina. I know Miami's down the road. We'll worry about them. But I think you get supreme confidence if you're Virginia Tech, if you can win this bad boy on the road.
Totally agree. I think Bronco Mendenhall, Virginia, looking for the same thing Saturday night in Chapel Hill. He talked about playing – with physicality and its importance.
Oh, I think it's that emphasis isn't just UVA, UNC. That's any team, any week. And yeah, perceptions from different opponents and their staffs are always varied, right? And the lenses are varied. But it is something that has to happen to win a division. You have to be physical. You have to be tough. You have to play hard. And then you have to execute your assignments and techniques. And so that is kind of at the core of what it takes to repeat as a division champion or to remain consistent in college football, even with all the run and play action and RPOs and spread formations and quarterback runs and unique formations and the ball going downfield and all the points. If you don't address that part, when you need it, it's not there. And that's usually in really critical moments.
I'm going to run this by somebody else before the week's over. Maybe Luganville at 8:30. Virginia has taken the tact of, we're going to bring a fight. Now, have they done that in the past? Absolutely. But I think Virginia's looking to bring the fight part and parcel by what we talked about the opening game, Virginia Tech, Carolina. Remember Virginia Tech just lined up and ran the ball on Carolina?
I think it goes deeper than that. I think Bronco's trying to establish the fact that, hey, you know what? We haven't been great on the road. And to win on the road, we've got to be physical. We got to come out and set the tone, even though there'll be 50,000 people screaming against us. And even though they've had North Carolina's number, beating them four straight,
right?
The one thing that we have documented with Virginia is, man, they've been terrific at home. Right. Doesn't matter who they're playing. But when they go on the road, they are not the same team.
Correct.
And I think Bronco is getting it through their head. And there was another thing he said there that I thought was interesting. If you want to repeat as division champion.
Yeah, because he's still thinking of it as 19.
What he's thinking is, you know what? Nobody's dethroned us
as
the coastal champ. And I think that's one of those mind games. And if you keep hearing it, you get the sense of it. Yeah, you're right. You know, nobody's won the – last time somebody won the coastal was us.
Right.
And so I think all of that is really smart.
Yeah.
And so I think it runs a lot deeper than, it's going to have to be a fight because you know North Carolina's going to have an edge, especially with what's coming out of the Virginia locker room this week. But Virginia is going to have to set the tone to guess what? Doesn't matter if we're playing in Charlottesville or if we're on the road. If we're going to be a championship team, you got to play to that standard every single week.
Michigan State has been uncharacteristically explosive on offense. It's not just the 3 yards in a cloud of dust that – you maybe become accustomed to. Manny Diaz says as Miami gets ready to host the Spartans, they need those kind of plays to be shut down on Saturday.
A great balance because they can beat you running, throwing, or with quarterback run game. There's not a lot of teams that have the ability to do all three. And but it's going to come down to great pre-snap communication. I think that's my point. You can't get beat before the snap. You got to be aligned great. You got to communicate. You got to know what the cover structure is, what the run fit structure is. On every play, because generally speaking, when explosive plays happen from a defensive standpoint, normally for three reasons. One, they happen for there's a lack of effort, and I do think our kids play extremely hard. A missed assignment, which I mentioned, a communication error where someone gets cut free, or missed tackles. It's important, and a lot of times having great effort helps the tackling things. You get a lot of hats to the ball, makes it easier to tackle. So I'm sure Mel Tucker would say the same thing. As a defensive coach, you always believe that defense is in charge of those things, all three of those things. And if a defense accomplishes those things, then usually the explosive plays get limited unless it's something. Now you just get beat one-on-one. And Michigan State's got guys that can make contested catches down the field against really, really good coverage.
Missed tackles jumps right off the page so far with Miami. They have got to wrap up Saturday.
I got
news for you. I mean, Kenneth Walker, we saw him at Wake Forest. He was a bowling ball. He's going up to Michigan State.
He was a home run hitter, too, He's been at Michigan State.
He's been good.
He will torch you deep.
After 2 weeks of Miami football, hey, when you get to the guy with the ball, you better put him down on the ground. That has been an issue a little bit the first 2 weeks. So that must improve Saturday at high noon at Hard Rock.
A couple of years ago, NC State found itself a little bit of a injury carousel. It was almost, every week, right?
Seemed that way.
And now the Wolfpack has sustained two big injuries on defense. Peyton Wilson, one of the best tacklers, if not the best tackler in the league, and Cyrus Fagan, the safety, who already had one interception, was holding down kind of the secondary spot. Well, Dave Doran at the podium this week talked about the injuries and how they can inspire the other guys that are now going to get that opportunity.
I know there was a genuine, just heartfelt emotion in there about those two guys. And we love those guys, man. And we feel for them. And we know what the game and the team means to them. And so, I think that pain that we all suffer for them can help us play hard for them, And I know they will. But, it's just challenging for anyone. I mean, we're going to all take the same mentality of it's next man's opportunity. And I know Jalen Scott will do everything he can. And Rakeem Ashford will do everything he can. And Cyrus is dead, and that's kind of what you have to do. It's part of not just football. It's part of life. We all lose things that we expect to have on a day-to-day basis. And, how you step up around them, you do it as a family. And I think that's what we have to do as a team.
Next man up for the Wolfpack, but I think they'll be just fine knocking off Furman this week. They'll be back to their winning ways.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. That's a late ball game, by the way. 7:30 start at Carter Finley in Raleigh. Pat Narduzzi and Pittsburgh are back home at Heinz Field after the win against Tennessee. Coach says proud of the fan involvement in Knoxville from the Pittsburgh side and looks forward to the same thing Saturday.
Our fans were unbelievable. You know, I heard they were unbelievable. I actually had a video sent to me Friday night, how they took over Knoxville, I guess. You know, our fans were unbelievable. They were really, really good. We need that again this weekend. From my understanding, the game is not televised locally, so, you know, get your tickets and get there. But our fans were unbelievable. They helped us win that football game. We can't do it together. You know, we talk about we, not me, and the we part of it is our fans were there. You felt them. You heard them. You know, I think early in the game, they were yelling and chanting SEC, SEC. And then late in the game, I heard a, you know, ACC, you know, come, you know, crashing down and Neyland Stadium. So it was, they were impressive. They were good. It was fun to sing the fight song with them in that atmosphere. Got quiet in the fourth quarter. Pretty quiet in there.
Ooh. You think Ryan McGee heard that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask.
I don't know.
You'd have to ask.
Well, so we had an ACC chant in Knoxville? Really? Yeah,
it didn't make the broadcast.
I didn't hear that.
No, they didn't break the broadcast.
They break that down? They just kind of zone that out?
I'm not quite sure what was
You're
happening.
Not sure?
I'm not sure.
All I know is it was a W. I
have to talk to Luganville about it. Luganville will be with us. He was
That's
there.
That's right. Luke's was there.
Yeah, we'll just ask him.
We'll ask him.
Yeah. All right. Last one here before we get to Jalen Mitchell here in a couple minutes. Scott Satterfield talked about the importance of establishing the run Friday night, ironically with Jalen Mitchell getting ready to join us, against UCF.
They're a really good run defense, and I think they do that, you know, with the how aggressive they are up front. You know, we got to find ways to do it. And that's what we're doing now in the game planning, you know, finding the ways where we can try to get some edges and to be able to get some pop some runs in there. You know, and there may be something that you do different on that as well, you know.
I got an idea.
Again, if they're all run, if they're all stacking tackle. The box, then we got to do something outside.
Right,
you know, so
run and tackle.
So you know, a lot of it just kind of go where they're not, you know, mentality. But we got to figure out a way to stay on the field, keep sustaining drives, keep their offense off the field, and then we got to get down there and score touchdowns.
Makes sense to me.
Kind of what we're looking for.
Makes sense. Tons of sense to me.
Kind of what we're looking for.
Friday right night, there. Though. That's a Friday night special.
Ooh.
Get you ready for the week three a little earlier.
There are a lot of good Friday night games involving ACC teams getting ready to surface. We got about 6 weeks of them. Really good games.
You going to do any of those?
No, sir.
You don't have any Friday night games?
Mm-hmm.
Saturday only for you?
I think so. That's right.
That's good. You hang out in the basement.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tom Luganville will be joining us in about 15 minutes or so. Get his take as we get ready for week three of the college football season. The ACC has some interesting non-conference games, some critical conference games coming up. And, of course, Jalen Mitchell is going to join us here momentarily from Louisville as they get ready on Friday night to play again, their third game in 12 days. How about that? It's tough.
Man.
That's tough.
Yeah, early on, right? I mean, early on, you're playing all these games. You're trying to get it all sorted out and try and get your rotations put together, a little bit of depth. You want to play some people, get some experience there, and you're in a fist fight on Labor Day night. Then you turn around and play Eastern Kentucky, who you know is going to give you a good shot, and here's a Friday night game.
Against a good team.
Absolutely a good team.
Yeah, UCF can play.
Sling it around.
They've been able to play for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Heupel, who we saw lose last week, did a great job down there at UCF.
Yeah. And so now here's Louisville's test. You get UCF. And then, by the way, behind this, ACC play.
And let me tell you, not to fast forward the clock because I hate doing that. How big is that game potentially based on what happens this week with those two schools?
Wow.
That really becomes big, big, big critical.
Okay, if I asked you, the ACC's leading rusher right now is Mateo Duran at Duke, and nobody should be surprised after the opening night at Charlotte.
Well, when
right?
you go for 255 in week one, you probably got a head start.
All right, there are three backs actually over 100 yards. Jayshon Corbin of Florida State has another 100-yard game the other night. Sean Tucker of Syracuse had the big night on opening night. Then it goes Zonovan Knight, no surprise there. Patrick Garwo, Jahmyr Gibbs, who we thought would be good, Jalen Mitchell, Sam Howell is eighth. So just ahead, actually tied for seventh with Sam Howell, is Jalen Mitchell.
Well, when you go for $103, or I think it's 103, 104.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, you're going to get into the mix in some shape, way, or form after only 2 weeks.
Let's go to Derby City. Jalen Mitchell joins us on the Cards Cam from Louisville this morning. Jalen, how are you? Oh, uh-oh. Hang on.
The team of mystery remains that way.
Stop.
They are the team of mystery. They still are. I mean, seriously. The Ole Miss game, nothing in the first half. They finally scored the second half and, you know, built some momentum. Then last week, Eastern Kentucky, see you later.
Yeah.
30-3. Now you got a tough matchup on Friday night. I told you, three games, 12 days. That is difficult for anybody.
Yes, sir.
I still don't know what they're going to do. Do you?
I agree with you in this light. We're going to have a broader understanding of you can learn some things from Eastern Kentucky. I'm just not sure what you learn, right? I mean, that's a game you're supposed to win. Did you play a lot of people? Yeah. But
you put 30 on the board. Your defense did a nice job.
Yeah, you're gone from Ole Miss to now UCF.
Right.
Those are your markers before you go to Tallahassee.
I totally agree with you.
So, to me, I think, you know, can you defend the UCF throw game? They're going to run the ball. They're doing it more. The Gus Bus now features ground game.
And they stop the run. So you're going to have to deal with a team that really loves to stop the run. So
correct.
if you're Jalen Mitchell, hey, you got to bring your lunch or your dinner Friday night.
And that's the other thing, too. You're going to get the ball.
You're going to get touches.
All right, let's try Jalen again live from Louisville this morning. Jalen, we got you?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, I saw that you're from Rockledge, Florida. And next week, you guys play at Florida State. Jayshon Corbin is from Rockledge, Florida. You guys are in the top 7 in the ACC in rushing. But there are only about 20,000 people, I think, in Rockledge, Florida. So, I mean, two bosses running the ball in the ACC from the same hometown. That's got to be a pretty good feeling for the folks back home.
Yeah, it's definitely a dream for the hometown, Area 51.
I know this much. You have watched tape on this crowd you got Friday night, and they love to stop the run. What kind of challenge is that for you and that offensive line Friday?
We always take a challenge each week just to be better and to be, you know, our offense. I think it's more so us focusing on the fine details, our reads, seeing rotation, making the right calls if there's pressure on the play side edge, and doing our best at executing.
Jalen, this is now your game. I mean, you had a complimentary role behind Javian and some of those guys in the last year or so, and now this is your game. What's that been like from a preparation standpoint each week?
Just trying to get as much film in and to see defensive tendencies as much as I can. You know, it all comes down to the film room and how much time you put into your game plan and how it will execute against the opponent's defense.
Jalen, we mentioned the fact that this will be Louisville's third game in 12 days. How's the body feel? I mean, you know, it always takes a couple pops, and all of a sudden you realize, all right, it's go time. But, I mean, 3 in 12 days is tough.
I mean, it's the best it can be. You know, the weight staff and Coach Mike Siriano does a great job of keeping us healthy, giving us extra recovery days, even though we've been practicing every single day. They've been doing more, taking the load off, no pads, just fast-paced mental practices.
So does that mean that the mental reps become more of a premium?
Definitely so. It comes into play where we have walkthroughs and seeing different blitz pickups and trying to read different coverages with the defense.
Jalen, I've called your team the team of mystery because sometimes I don't know if you're going left or going right. after 2 weeks, you tell me and everybody else, what is this team about? Eliminate the team of mystery. What do you love about this team after 2 weeks?
This team is about family. You know, we can take a loss or not perform as well and still be together and try to, you know, achieve the greater goal that we planned on at the beginning of the season. You know, things are always going to go up and down during the football season. It's just about getting on track and fixing your mistakes, you know.
So, Jalen, with the way this is unfolding and the game Friday night against UCF, and Pax mentioned the three games in the 12 days, and then the ACC schedule behind it, how important is it to stay locked in on the single game, just to understand it's Friday night? Because I know guys can get distracted. There's some that can look ahead. some can't. But how important is it right now for your team to stay locked in on the single mission?
It means everything to us. You know, each week we try to go 1-0. It's never a look to next week or a plan for next week's game, because the game in front of us is the most important, because nothing's more fun than winning. And if you focus on the next game, you can't win the game that's at hand right now.
Louisville in the last 3 years is 9-1 at home against unranked teams. Here comes UCF, who's really close to being a ranked team. You know how good they are. But how cool was it last weekend to finally zip through there, Cardinal Stadium? And, man, there's fans, there's energy, there's a vibe, and you know it'll be rocking on Friday.
I mean, it's always an amazing experience. You know, last year due to COVID, we didn't have the fan experience too much, but to have the fans behind us, you know, cheering us on, whether it be good or bad, it's always great to have, you know, to know someone has your back at the end of the day.
Well, and you guys definitely have great home crowds at Cardinal Stadium. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. Tell me about the working with Malik here. You guys, I mean, you got reps a year ago. I mean, you had 52 carries a season ago, but, I mean, you're already more than half that in the first two ball games as the lead guy in this. So take me through the relationship with you and Cunningham.
You know, me and Malik are like Marley and Mike. In the backfield, we're always communicating, talking, different protections. You know, if he sees something I don't see, he lets me know before the play. It's a lot of communication that goes on. And between the both of us, we have somewhat of a, you know, a brotherhood, a family vibe, so to speak.
Hmm. You know, as a Florida guy, I understand that when you're in high school, you had an offer from UCF to play, didn't you?
Yeah.
You got a smile on your face. You know what? You ended up in Louisville. So I'm sure you have some buddies on that UCF team you can't wait to see on Friday.
Hopefully I get to see a few guys I played against in high school or played against in the county. But, you know, it's not so much about Central Florida. I just love that I get to play this game of football, to be honest.
Jalen, the choice to go to Louisville, you know, there was a lot going on when you when you signed up there. What was the lure for you? Why was Louisville the best fit?
I felt like it was the best transition from high school football to college football with the living situation, the people I was around. I visited a few different colleges. It didn't feel that home vibe that I needed, you know, to move far away from home. But when I got up here, I was comfortable during my visit. I knew a few of the players. Most of the team is recruited from, you know, the south half of the states. So it's a lot of similarities in our personnel.
Hey, Jalen, you got any name, image, and likeness deals yet? Anything coming your way?
Nah, I'm not getting any NILs, you know. I'm just staying focused on the main thing.
Well, that's important, obviously. I mean, your education, playing football. But, you know, for everybody out there watching, a man here needs a deal, right? We got to make some money on the side. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. We got to make some that coin on the side now while we're up here in Louisville having a good time. Man, we got to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Here's the question we've got. We heard all offseason about Louisville speed, right? And Malik told us in July that I think Tyler Harrell is the one that leads the game. Is that still the case? Or we found somebody else?
Nah, Tyler Harrell still leads the game by a long shot.
Really? There's nobody close? Yeah.
Nobody that can compare. That's just a world-class speed right there. You can put him on the track and he can compete.
All right, I'm gonna end it this way. This is our traditional question, Jalen. Since you've been at Louisville, I want to know, what has been your hardest class?
Accounting. Definitely accounting.
Here we go again. Accounting, the math, man. I'm telling you. Me too, Jalen. Not in.
Yeah.
No math, man.
Not interested, but you know you got to do what you got to do to achieve your goals.
That's right. That's it. Well, listen, stay healthy. Good luck Friday night and the rest of the season, my man.
Look forward to watching you. Take care.
And I hope you get that. I hope you get that name, image, and likeness deal.
Some deals going, man.
That's it. We're
gonna
make some coin there.
Take care.
Yes, sir. All right, appreciate you.
You bet. Jalen Mitchell of Louisville, tied for 7th in the ACC in rushing. He'll be a big part of Friday night for the Cards.
And I'm thrilled he did not answer that question with Spanish. I was waiting for another Louisville Spanish answer to the hardest class. I am glad. In some respects, I'm relieved it was not Spanish.
We get this show back on the road. We go to Louisville.
We're never going on the road.
We're going to introduce you to somebody who teaches Spanish at the University of Louisville.
Great.
We're going to have somebody on the show who teaches Spanish
at
Louisville.
Great.
So you can ask them, why do student athletes say it's such a hard class?
Un cerveza, por favor.
That'd be it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a Wednesday. Yeah. My thanks to Jalen Mitchell who just joined us. Louisville gets ready for UCF on Friday night. Our next guest, eventually he'll be here in the basement with us, I assume, at some point in time.
I hope. I mean, I'm thinking Wednesdays he comes sauntering in. We still get the breakfast.
The dogs are missing.
The dogs are missing stuff. Yeah. I mean, Fuller's over here in front of the desk. Chester's crashed. And Tom Luganbill is in the woods of Weddington.
That's it. Here he is. Blue Ostrich.
Right, yeah. Our own Henry so David Thoreau, ladies and gentlemen, right there.
Two things. I'm not allowed to come back into the basement unless it's radio robe weather, which it's not, but it's getting there. It's getting a little chilly in the mornings. And secondly, just seeing that shot I saw coming back on air, are you wearing socks, Wes?
No.
Nobody wears socks on this show.
No, nobody wears socks
on this show. No socks on that show.
No socks.
Well,
neither does
Chester
Pack.
And Fuller aren't wearing socks.
Look at Chester. He is out, man.
Chester could care less what you think, Logan Bill.
Chester does not like my analysis.
No. Chester is just glad that Joe Milton's not throwing any more passes because I think Milton hit him inside the head on Saturday.
All right, let's move
on. Joe Milton couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
Stop. All right, are you going to rank quarterbacks for us here? Are you going to get in the fray of this, an educated mind like yourself? You're going to give us five ACC guys in order? I just want five. That's all we're looking for.
Five. Are we going 5-1?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to start off. I might surprise you a little bit. Now, everything I've done is to this point.
Right.
I'm
it's
not projecting forward.
Right. 2 weeks, right.
Exactly.
2 weeks. Right. Correct.
All right. So my number five is Braxton Burmeister.
Attaboy. That was my five.
I have been he's impressed me as a passer more than I thought he would. We knew what type of athlete he was going to be. So that, isn't overly shocking to me. He has the lowest completion percentage of my five guys, but he's been good with the football. And I think that's really important. Number four for me off of Braxton Burmeister, and you see the athleticism there. I mean, that's the part we all knew we were going to see. But as a thrower, I think that's really, really important to see the progress he's made. I'm going to go Sam Hartman at Wake.
Okay.
Hasn't turned the ball over. Four touchdowns. Completing like 67% of his passes. Mm-hmm. He's just been sharp, man. I mean, he's done all of the things that have been asked of him, and he's been extremely efficient. Now, I don't know how good Wake is yet. I know how well coached they are, but I've just been impressed with him at all three levels of the field. You're seeing some of that here. He's made a lot of big shots downfield, yet still has a high completion percentage.
Great.
My number three guy is going to be Phil Dracovic. And again, it's only in the first 2 weeks. But what I've been impressed with, and I know it's unfortunate that we're not going to see him, is there's been no sophomore slump. In fact, you could make an argument he's been better, all right? He's been really good with the football, hasn't taken risks, high completion rate. The average yards per pass attempt means that Boston College is really pushing the ball downfield, and they're successful doing it, which generally those are low percentage throws. So I hate to see him no longer in the lineup. Number two for me is Kenny Pickett. And, I had a chance to see him last week, and there were three areas where he was simply sensational, and all three are critical. Third down conversion rate, all right, red zone offense, and then the 2- and 4-minute offense. The 2-minute offense at the end of the second quarter last week, the 4-minute offense to drain the clock at the end of the game. Kenny Pickett was almost flawless. And trust me, if you watch that game, it did not start out well for this offense. They started their first three drives, all right, against Tennessee on the road, backed up inside their own 10-yard line. Also had a blocked punt. So he was outstanding. My number one guy is Brennan Armstrong. This shouldn't be a surprise to you guys because last year I was so excited about this guy when I'd see him. I just didn't see a lot of him. But every time I saw him, the guy played good.
Yeah.
And, five touchdowns last week. He's a little bit like Braxton Burmeister in the sense that you know what you're going to get athletically, But, man, as a passer, he has really grown. I know Bronco Mendenhall this summer was really excited about his progress. I just think he's a dynamic guy. Run to pass, he is really difficult to contend with and has been ultra productive, completing 71% of his passes, almost 72. I don't know if you can ask for more than that in the first 2 weeks.
No Sam Howe in your top five. Why?
Not yet. I just don't think they've been consistent enough of an offense. I know they're breaking in new components. I know that the run game isn't what they'd like it to be just yet. I think they're a football team that is working through dealing with expectations and an offseason of everybody patting you on the back. I just don't see them as in rhythm or him as in rhythm right now, and they've turned the ball over. And all I think the one common denominator amongst the five I've had is a high completion rate, very few risks with the football, and some explosive plays to go along with it.
I like that. All right, now, Armstrong versus Howell Saturday night here on ACC Network.
Yeah.
Kind of sets the stage a little bit, right?
It's exciting, man. I mean, you know both teams are going to be well-coached and well-prepped. And, you know, for those who haven't paid attention to Brennan Armstrong, of course, just as now as we, you know, give him some accolades, I don't want him to go on the field and lay an egg, but I think you're going to be really impressed with him. He's a big, physical, strong athlete, but his growth as a passer, and you saw flashes of it a year ago,
right?
Leads me to believe that that he's got a chance to exceed expectations of this team. You know, coming into this season, what was this team going to look like? Now all of a sudden, they look pretty formidable. And as I said, with North Carolina, they need to get on track and get in rhythm and hit a hot streak.
You know, Tom, I think it's interesting you just talked about North Carolina trying to find the rhythm. I would go as far to say is the preseason three ranked ACC teams, Clemson, North Carolina, and Miami, all of them offensively are trying to find that rhythm. It's kind of interesting. Again, you don't know how this is ever going to play out, but those three in particular, I think, are still searching for answers when they have the ball.
I would also add NC State in there. Maybe not off of week one, but certainly off of week two down in Starkville. And you're right. Listen, the one thing, too, is you can carry over the names on the backs of jerseys. You can't carry over the same chemistry of the same team, the same output, the same production. That's manufactured new each and every year. So every time you take the field in 2021, you are not going to be the team you were in 2020. And whether that's a personnel shift, whether that's a scheme shift, I think off-season – discussion and debate and hype and all accolades, praise, sometimes that can be a detriment. You know, all the teams you just mentioned were the media darlings for coming into this season as just setting the world on fire, right? Doesn't look to me like any of those teams yet have handled that expectation to the level that we thought that they would. And that's something that you're having to grow through. I've got Cincinnati and Indiana this week, and I kind of feel the same way about Indiana. Mm. They have a program that hasn't had a lot of praise heaped upon them in an offseason, and people talking great about them. They go out in week one, and they stink up the joint versus Iowa. Now they kind of rebound versus Idaho. You got Cincinnati coming to town. What are you going to do? Are you going to be that team that everybody was excited about last year, or are you going to be what we saw a mix of in the last 2 weeks? And I kind of feel that way about, you know, the Miamis, the NC States, and the teams that you mentioned there, Pac.
All right, Tom, you've been to Norman, Oklahoma, and Knoxville, Tennessee, and this week, Bloomington for Indiana and Cincinnati. Yeah. The impact of the environments in these games. I mean, last Saturday, Tennessee gets off to this 10-0 start, and you're thinking T. Martin's coming through the tunnel with Andy Kelly and Reggie Cobb for the Vols. I mean, it's on like it was back in the 90s. So now all of a sudden, what's the impact of those environments? Because one of the things I like most about Pitt's win last Saturday in Knoxville was their ability to fall behind and show me the edge and the veteran presence that I thought this team had. They proved things to me last week that I almost had to see it happen to believe they were capable of it.
I totally agree. They came off of a week in which the SEC did not have a good opening week. And now you have this opportunity to go on the road in a hostile environment against an SEC team, and I know it's not a conference game, but it's another opportunity to maybe separate yourself, particularly from the rest in the Coastal, while they're kind of trying to figure out who they are, what they're going to be. And it's interesting, too, because talking with Mark Whipple, talking with Kenny Pickett, on the decision as to why he came back. Mark Whipple brought up something really, really interesting. And this was Friday night. This was before the game. He said, you know, when I was having the discussion with Kenny, said, have you looked who we at our schedule yet? And Kenny said, no, I haven't looked at it. He goes, well, go look and see who we play in week two. Mm-hmm. And Kenny Pickett goes, oh, wow, Tennessee on the road in Knoxville. And Mark Whipple goes, yeah, if you decide to come back, all right, and you go on the road and you play well in that environment and against an SEC team, guess what the first film that they're going to put on to watch you as a senior or as a super senior? It's going to be that game.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Kenny Pickett did. And it, you're right. That thing was it was off to an abysmal start. If Tennessee hits just two, if not all four, of their deep balls, it could have been a 28-0 deal in the middle of the first quarter in favor of Tennessee. So they just kept hanging in there. Once they got field position, their leadership kind of just took over. And Pat Narduzzi had stated that with us the night before. He said, we got to weather the storm. Things might not go great early. The environment in the crowd, he goes, obviously, we've played at a Clemson. We beat Clemson at Clemson. All right, so we're used to that. He goes, but I'm not going to lie. He goes, we spent the entire week piping in Rocky Top to every one of our practices, and we had all of our coaches and a lot of our some of the offensive linemen wearing earplugs because we didn't want them to hear what was going on. We challenged our kids. They handled it. They were prepared for the moment, and they deserve a lot of credit in that regard.
Tom, Florida State seems to be a topic every time we have you on the show. A week ago, seriously, a week ago, we're talking about, man, effort. You felt like they kind of turned a corner. Again, I know it was a loss, but, man, it was just the way they played. In fact, I even said, hey, years past, they'd have lost that game 55-18 as opposed to giving me that fourth quarter rally. Then Saturday happens, right? And it's almost as if, hey, whatever good was gained by week one, you just gave it right back in week two. You can't emphasize the importance of this game this week for Florida State on the road at Wake Forest. It almost feels like it's early, but just feels like a crossroads game for the Noles moving forward against Wake Forest.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I said it on this show, said it with you guys. I was proud of the way they responded. You know, they would have folded their lawn chair in the last 4 to 5 years, getting down 38-20. And so, again, no moral victories. But then to go out and show that you have absolutely no ability to handle any type of positive reinforcement, any type of praise, to get better off of what you learned from week one and to know that, hey, we improved a little bit. Now we got to improve a little bit more. And you go into a matchup with an FCS team that almost beat you last year. So it's not as if they shouldn't have had your attention, okay? And you dissect that last play, and you look at the effort, you look at the scheme of it, you look at the player position, you look at the angles after the catch, and the whole thing is an utter disaster, right? And you're sitting there scratching your head going, how do they get themselves in these moments? And then to cap it all off, all right, while Jacksonville State is celebrating on the field, you have an offensive lineman proposing to his girlfriend. Now, if that's not an indictment on this team and this team's locker room and their care for football, I don't know what is. I mean, I'm sitting there watching that going, you couldn't have moved that to the parking lot? You know, you couldn't have moved that to a spot maybe outside of the stadium? It just it was bad optics all around to cap off a very poor night.
Well, I'm assuming she said yes. I mean, it wasn't all a total loss. I mean, I'm assuming she said yes.
I would assume.
Right. You know, I'll offer you this. Roddy Jones pointed this out. And this is what really, best we can tell, Jacksonville State ran the same play on the last two snaps.
Yes.
The
and it
first
wasn't
play.
A Hail Mary, by the way.
No, not a Hail Mary. No, he was. I think he was throwing the ball potentially to try and either score or get rid of it quick enough to get them in field goal range for the kid to try a field goal to kick for overtime, right? That's what I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that Jamie Robinson was the only guy hustling. Jarvis Brownlee and the other guy, Sidney Williams, were misplaying it in the secondary. But on the play before the last play, Pack, Zarek Cooper makes the wrong read. He throws to in front of the Florida State bench. Damon Filial Johnson, who caught the touchdown pass, is wide open on the other side, Luke's. He's
on the same
wide
route.
Open. Same route.
Yeah, I know. Against coverage. Why are they even playing coverage?
Can't explain it.
I mean, literally one of the – there's not a defensive coordinator in football that you talk to that doesn't use this phrase. Keep the ball in front of you.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just – it's crazy. Let me ask you a big picture question. If Phil Jurkovec does not take another snap this year, does he go pro? Do they have enough film potentially as a draft-eligible kid for him to go?
I would caution against it. I think it would be very, very risky. We've seen that with Mark Sanchez. We've seen that with Mitchell Trubisky. It's not enough. I think there's enough examples. If you have the right representation, there's enough examples to point to. And fortunately, he's got a head coach that's spent time in the National Football League to say, hey, listen, man, you might need a little more meat on this bone, a little more of a sample size. So I want to see him come back. I think it would be good for him to come back. But I think there's enough examples to show that those limited starts and the limited experience hasn't necessarily bored out well for some.
All right, here's the other question. Does the injury and the where the injury is, even though it's a non-throwing hand, you deal with these guys at both levels. Is that a bigger concern than people think because it's the hand?
No, because it's a fracture, right? Okay. So I think that when you're talking about those types of things, of course, I have no medical background whatsoever.
But you can play one on television. Let's move along.
That's right. I do know that strains, tears, all of those sorts of things with ligaments and tendons and all those things are far more damaging and have far more lingering effects or can. Okay. All right, as opposed to heal bones and fractures.
All right,
I'm good.
By the way, do you have to?
You ready to get rid of me? All right,
no, I'm good. No, that's all I need to know from you.
All right,
Doc.
Here's the other thing. Do you have to return that headset to the UN before the general session begins later today in New York, perhaps?
Well, I had to have my translation from the German you guys are speaking.
Oh my gosh! Really?
Okay. And then, right. and then, right after I'm done with you, I got to go to Woodshop.
Oh my God, Luke! You're amazing.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.